Log Talk Radio.
They used to tell me I was building a dream.
Good evening and welcome. This is your news director, Richard Spezak, with Progressive News Network. On behalf of my co-producer and myself, Mickey Royce, I want to welcome you to Progressive News Network, where progressives from across the state have a chance to talk about the good work that they're doing to make this the better state that we know it can be. I want to tell you, we have some really interesting guests tonight. We have Susan Bucher, who is the Palm Beach election supervisor. We've got two fine gentlemen from Move On, Rebuilding a Dream. And then we've got some fine folks from the healthcare community who are going to be talking about mind-body positive healing for the AIDS epidemic currently facing the Treasure Coast. I do want to bring you to your attention a really interesting letter that was shared on a couple progressive circuits. And this is addressing the famous Cat Food Commission, who was looking to balance the budget. This is pre-Ryan's dream. This gentleman addresses Senator Simpson from Wyoming, and he says this. He says, Senator Alan Simpson, former senator from Wyoming, co-chair of Obama's Deficit Commission, calls senior citizens the greediest generation, and he compared Social Security to a milk cow with 310 million teats. That was August of 2010. And here's a response. And I think this gentleman made some interesting points. He says, number one, Alan, let's get a few things straight. As a career politician, you've been on the public tit for over 50 years. Number two, I've been paying Social Security taxes for 48 years since I was 15. I'm now 63. Number three, my Social Security payments and those of millions of other Americans were tucked safely away in an interest-bearing account for decades until you political leave his characterization aside, until you political operatives decided to raid the account and give our money to a bunch of zero-ambition losers in return for our votes, and thus bankrupt the system and turn Social Security into a Ponzi scheme that would have made Bernie Madoff proud. And recently, just like Lucy and Charlie Brown, you and your ilk pulled the proverbial football away from millions of American seniors nearing retirement and moved the goalpost for full retirement from age 65 to age 67. Now, you and your shill commission are proposing to move the goalpost yet again. I and millions of other Americans have been paying into Medicare from day one. And now you morons propose to change the rules of the game. Why? Because you mismanaged the other parts of the economy to such an extent you needed to steal money from Medicare to pay the bills. I and millions of other Americans have been paying income taxes our entire lives. And now you propose to increase our taxes yet again. Why? Because you're incompetent. And you spent our money so profligately that you just kept on spending even after you ran out of money. Now you come to the American taxpayers and say you need more to pay off the debt. And to add insult to injury, you label us greedy for calling you out on your incompetence. Well, Captain Bullshit, I have a few questions for you. How much money have you earned from the American taxpayers during your 50-year political career? At what age did you retire from your political career? And how much are you receiving in annual retirement benefits from the taxpayers? Let's also talk to medical care. How much do you pay for your government-provided health insurance? What cuts in your retirement and health care benefits are you proposing in your disgusting deficit reduction proposal? Or, as usual, have you exempted yourself and your political cronies? Congress, you're the greedy ones. It's you and your fellow nutcases who have bankrupted America and stolen the American dream from millions of loyal, patriotic taxpayers. And for what? Votes? Yeah, that's right. You and yours have bankrupted America for the sole purpose of advancing your pathetic political careers. You know it, and we know that we all know it. And now you can take that to the bank, you miserable person. If you like the way things are in America, delete it. If you agree with a fellow citizen, pass it along. So I thought I'd pass that along to you. I also wanted to mention a couple other things. We've got some really interesting events coming up. The Progressive Caucus, the U.S. Congress's Progressive Caucus, is coming to Miami to ask for your input. That's something that a lot of our elected officials locally don't seem to have any interest in. And if they pretend to have a town hall meeting, they'll screen those questions in advance. The Progressive Caucus is going to come to Miami-Dade Community College North Campus, and that's next Saturday, the 17th. I think you should be there. Also, the following Saturday, for those of you who are interested in trying to move the Democratic Party off the snooze setting that it's placed itself on and its corporate cronies, the following week, Progressive Platform Conference in Orlando. It's on 7/23. It starts at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's only $20. If you need information, drop me a note. That's rick@averyvoice.com. rick@averyvoice.com. Or else you can just do a search for the Progressive Platform Conference in Orlando, July 23rd. Also, I got another interesting piece of email today from our friends at the Citizens for Legitimate Government. They are announcing an event on September 10th in Washington called Seize DC. I will leave the rest to your imagination. I think that's something else we should all be aware of. So let's get back to cases. Right now we find ourselves in a situation where if the announcements are to be believed, either A, once again, the Obama administration is going to sell us out, or B, oh, they're just, you know, playing some word games, and they're really, really, really this time going to look out for us. So I don't know about you, but trust comes pretty slow after you've been burned so many times. So if I were you and do what I did, I sent a letter and an email to the White House, then I called. And, gee, it seems the White House phones are very busy lately. So you should call in and get your message to the White House. It looks like we've got our first guest. Could this be? Let's see here. Hello, is this Susan?
Yes, it is. How are you?
Well, welcome, Ms. Booker. Welcome very much. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Susan, you have had a wonderful career serving this fine state. Why don't you tell us a little about your career?
Well, I started out a long time ago working for Palm Beach County and worked in the legislature as a legislative aide and was fortunate to get elected in District 88, Central West Palm Beach, and I served in Florida House for 8 years. And a couple of years ago, about 2.5 years ago, I ran and won election to be the Palm Beach County Supervisor of Elections. And I'm heading to my 20th election day on Tuesday. We have a runoff in the city of Lake Worth. So if anybody listening out there is a voter in the city of Lake Worth, you need to come out and vote on Tuesday. There's a runoff for your mayor.
Well, we have a lot of listeners in that area. You know, you really got yourself a hot seat there, my dear. The elections in this state, well, let's just say that there have been, I'm going to quote our former governor, nefarious interests at work in the past, but I think with someone of your responsibility, could you talk a little bit about what the recent legislative actions have done and how they've impacted what's going on with our pending elections?
Well, Rick, we're working really hard. The legislature unfortunately passed a sweeping election reform bill, and some of the changes are not favorable for the citizens. And I want to talk about particularly a couple that will impact voters on election day. If you have moved and you traditionally went to your new polling location to change your address, don't do that anymore. You need to change your address before you go to the polling location. You can even stand outside on your cell phone and call us. But if you go into a polling location and you're changing your address from one county to another, you will be required to vote a provisional ballot. It will take you extra time, a lot of paperwork, and if the paperwork is not correct, then your ballot cannot be opened from the envelope they stick it in, and we will not be able to count your vote. So you need to keep your address current with the Supervisor of Elections. Another issue that happened is that your absentee ballot request has probably expired. If you voted by absentee ballot in the general election in November of 2010, you need to reapply because the legislature changed the law last year and your request was good for only one general election. There is good news, though. If you apply for your request for absentee ballot now and you ask for every available election, your request will be good through the November 2014 general election, but we need everybody to reapply for your absentee ballot because of the crazy law changes. Another provision that has been very difficult to deal with is that the legislature reduced early voting from 2 weeks to 8 days, and they did allow us to be open for a minimum of 6 hours and a maximum of 12. In Palm Beach County, we will be open a maximum of 12 hours. and we're going to go from 8 sites during the presidential preference primary and the primary election to 16 locations for the general election so that we can run enough people through, since they've cut early voting in half in terms of the days, the number of days. We will stay open the maximum number of hours, but I will caution you that because of this decrease, it's now only 1 week rather than two, and we saw tremendous lines during the last presidential election. So I would encourage people to either vote by absentee ballot or come to the polls on election day. Don't stand in four-hour lines, because those lines don't exist on election day. There's a couple of other things that they did, but I want to let you talk a little bit.
Well, I just have a question. I've done an awful lot of work in the sciences, and one thing I wanted to ask before we went too far from this particular part of the conversation about the changes. A lot of times scientists do modeling. They have mathematical figures or they have a formula to determine how long it takes a person to go from point A to point B. I was wondering, do you have studies at your office of how long the average voter takes at the voting booth? Have you seen numbers like that?
We do. We have to, because we have to know how many voters we can accommodate within each hour, especially during early voting. And that's how we came to the fact that we needed 16 sites in order to process what we did process at 11 sites during the 2008 presidential election. Well, we know that 24.53% of the population came out to vote early. We also know that the predominant early voters were Democrats. And the people who utilize absentee ballots more are Republicans. Those are statistical data.
Well, you can guess what I was asking for. I'm so happy to see that you've tried to accommodate the amount of capacity that you ultimately need, despite the framing from Tallahassee. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. Let me ask you another – well, I'll tell you what. I'll go ahead and let you finish the rest of the changes that you see, and then we'll go on to my next question.
Most substantial impacts that really impacted voter registration or gaining access to be able to vote is a law that changed about organizations, third-party organizations who register people to vote. And traditionally, this has been the League of Women Voters, the Boy Scouts, both parties do it. Lots of good organizations have participated, sororities, and, in registering individuals to vote. And the law changed, and it now requires registration with the Department of State if you want to go out and volunteer to register voters. And if there's a law that requires those applications, once they're completed, to be returned to the Supervisor of Elections office within 48 hours. Otherwise, that individual incurs a fine of $50 per application. And so a lot of the organizations, including the League of Women Voters, have discontinued registering people to vote. And I just want to put a message out there, and I want to give a shout-out and a thank you to Mickey Royce, because she's put something out there on my behalf, and that is that we will show up anytime, anywhere to register voters, because we are not bound by that requirement of $50 and registering all that. It is our job to register voters, and we will show up just about any event that you would have. All you need to do is email us or contact us by phone, and we will put it on our schedule, and we commit to go out to as many locations as we physically can to register voters now that this bad law came into effect and people, organizations, stopped registering voters.
You know, it seems to me that it's hard to make an argument that limiting registration is a good thing for democracy. Can you come up with some argument as how this makes sense?
It makes absolutely no sense. I served 8 years in the Florida House, and this legislation was some of the worst that I think I've ever seen. And I actively participated to lobby against it. Unfortunately, the bill was closed. They did not accept any of the amendments that were offered to this bill at any time in the House or in the Senate that were not favorable to the position that the party in charge wanted. And so I was very disappointed. But despite that, I will give you my word that our office will do everything possible to make sure that access and accountability is held, despite the fact that there are some laws that we did not agree with.
Well, that is as it should be. And I think you're expressing the exact kind of mindset that every citizen hopes that our servants who hold office would take. And I find that very reassuring. And thank you so much for that kind of the effort that you're clearly working with. Let me ask you one more difficult question, if I may. Many voters have been concerned over the years, especially here in the Sunshine State, where black box voting has produced, let's just say, interesting results. I know that we're still how does Palm Beach stand in terms of voting machines versus machines that produce some kind of output?
We went to paper ballots, and it's a statewide requirement, and that's a requirement that's been in effect for about 4 years. And we went to ballot scanners, and those ballot scanners actually show on the face of the machine an increase when you put your ballot in there. So you can be assured that the cartridge that is capturing the count of your ballot, it's actually showing you on the face, it's a number reading, and you'll see the number advance. Now, if there's any problems with those cartridges, because sometimes if the poll workers don't turn the machine off and they remove the cartridge won't read, we actually count the paper ballots. And so the paper ballots have provided not only for accurate counts, but it also provides for post-election audits. Right. And there are requirements for post-election audits, and those audits should match the results that you got on election night.
Does the election department perform any pretests?
We do. It's a requirement to perform a logistics and accuracy test prior to every single election. And so we pre-mark ballots, and we mark them any determination that could be voted on that ballot, we mark. And we make sure that the programming of scanners is appropriate to accept any, even overvotes, undervotes, all of that. An overvote is when you vote for too many people, and an undervote is when you don't vote for anybody. So we make a determination of all of the combinations that can happen, and we actually run a logistics and accuracy test. It's open to the public. We notice it in the newspaper, and it is recorded.
That's very reassuring. Very reassuring.
Well, I'll tell you, we are Palm Beach County, and I know that there has been tremendous scrutiny, and my goal is to get us off the radar. If everybody in the world can get election results correctly, then we can too. And I'm very proud to say that I have the hardest working team of government employees that I've ever worked with, and we're entering our 20th election day, and we have never had a discrepancy in election results since I took office. And it's been a lot of work. To run an election is a lot of work, but it takes tremendous precision. And I wasn't liked very well in the Florida House for that tremendous precision reading everything. But I think that this job lends itself to the kind of personal characteristics that I demonstrated prior to my taking this job. And it really has, I love the job. I know it's very important. Your vote is the benchmark to democracy. And we're out there registering voters. We go to swearings in of new immigrants. I was at the Bohemians are celebrating their 39th year of independence, registered voters at their event today. Yesterday I was in Rivera Beach at a church. So call me because I will be there if I can.
Well, that is really good news. Susan, you really, I think, set the high bar for responsible public servants, and I can't thank you enough for that effort. Let me ask you another difficult area of Florida's election system. We had an election recently, and Amendment 5 and 6 were voted on, passed by the citizens of Florida. But any observation, it seems, whatsoever of the actions the state has taken, they've done everything they can to, it seems, to thwart, slow, and obfuscate that process. we're having there's an event coming up in August 15th. When is the event going to be in Palm Beach County with the legislator coming to talk about?
It's on August 16th, and it's at FAU, and it's at 1 o'clock. And I intend to testify there because Florida has the latest date to make a determination of legislative, Congress, and state districts. And right now, and in fact, I got an opportunity today to talk to Representative Mac Bernard, and he sits on the redistricting committee. And they're traveling around, and they don't have maps, and they're not able to comment because they're afraid that they're going to get subpoenaed into court. So in my opinion, based on the last 10 years ago and participation in redistricting, they're not showing the public anything. And it's unfortunate. And also, adding to the grief of this, is that there's a lawsuit. There's a lawsuit from Congresswoman Brown and Representative Diaz-Balart out of Miami, and they're opposing 5 and 6. And unfortunately, the Florida House, the Speaker of the House, Dean Cannon, is a party to that lawsuit, and he's paying for it with the taxpayers' dollars. They've set aside substantial funds to fight about this in court in the last year's budget, despite the fact that there was tremendous budget deficit. And they're going around the state just listening, and they're not offering to show anything. 10 years ago, they traveled around with proposed maps, and people could make comments on those maps. I think hiding the ball.
Let me ask you this. When we have clearly a mandate, both of these have they won exceptionally, and we see
70% plus in Palm Beach County.
You were a legislator. What do you think? Do they really think they can stall this indefinitely? Do they really think they can keep the status quo?
That's an interesting question that you pose. Let me tell you that on the legislative website, if you go on the calendar, it shows the process that has to happen. The legislature meets January through March. It goes to the Attorney General. The Attorney General has 15 days. He flips it to the Supreme Court. It goes to the Supreme Court. Then it goes to the Department of Justice. It is completed on June 1st. And on June 4th, the supervisors will open qualifying for district offices for State House, State Senate, Congressional, and all of that. That is probably a physical impossibility. And so if court cases blow by qualifying, I'm assuming that the districts remain the same during qualifying that we're looking at now.
Let me ask you this. Is there any remedy to this cashing of funds? It seems to me there should be some case being able to be made that this is, governmental malfeasance. Why, they're clearly putting the taxpayer money aside to fight the taxpayer's will.
Well, is there any way to put it that way? I don't know. Right now, the state taxpayer money will pay to fight against Amendment 5 and 6, and the state taxpayer money will have to fight to defend that court case against 5 and 6 because it passed by the voters. And so we're playing both sides of that, but we're playing with taxpayer money.
How absolutely terribly served, once again, are the Florida citizens by this act. Unfortunately, it seems that the commercial press has no interest in this matter whatsoever, and no one is calling them out for this terrible injustice.
Well, I just want to give you credit because you are calling them out, and I think it's helpful for people to know the correct information. And, you know, where I come from, information was power. I read every single bill that I voted for. If they popped a bill out and I couldn't read it, I voted no. We need to go back to the core responsibilities of being a public servant, and that is to look out for the good of the public.
You know, Susan, I had the pleasure of meeting you when you were a legislator, and you impressed me then. And when I hear an elected official use the term public servant, that speaks volumes to me. Everything that you've
That's
said
who
this
we're
evening.
Supposed to be.
Evidently, that's rare knowledge, I'm guessing.
I learned it from the old guys. I have to say that I worked for a legislator who served for 22 years. He was an honorable man, and he really did teach me a lot about what you bring to the table and what you go home with, and that's called integrity. And so we need to look for some with our future candidates, and I would just urge voters to get involved, participate, ask these people running for office what they're going to do, ask them specific questions. When they come home from Tallahassee and from D.C., ask them how they voted. Ask them specific questions. It's your job.
Well, as you probably are aware, many of our congresspersons don't take questions from the public. But
I know.
Let me pat you on the back one more time, if I may. This show is designed, my friend, to give progressive voices an opportunity to speak to others. Because it's my experience that most politically active people are news junkies. We want to hear what's going on. We want to participate. But if you only hear commercial media, it's a very sad tale. They do not speak with our voice. They do not let progressive voices on. And I normally really, really, really try to keep this show with nothing but progressive voices and progressive activists rather than office holders. But you, my dear, are an exception. You are a public servant who seems to understand that role and the responsibilities there. That's why we made an exception in your case. You are an exemplary public servant, and I thank you for your service.
Well, thank you very much. But you know what? I am so very honored to serve. You know, it really is a rarity to have an average working person like me get to run for office and actually serve. And I will tell you that I am dedicated to the people of Palm Beach County and the state of Florida because it is a great honor to get to serve. And what I get to do now is more exciting than I ever dreamed I would get to do. And so we will work as hard as we can to make sure that there's ease and access at the polls and that our responsibilities reflect openness and accuracy like everybody else in the country. And that I give you my word.
Well, on that note, I couldn't think of a better one. Thank you so much for joining us, and I wish you the very best in your election.
Have a great day, and thank you for your work. I really appreciate it.
You have a good evening. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, friends, that was Susan Bucher, Supervisor of Elections in Palm Beach County. And like the song says, there's a better world coming.
There's a better world to come and tell you why, there's a better world to come and tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why.
Progressive News Network is brought to you through the sponsorship of the Media Goddess Enterprises and also Imagineering Productions. Both firms interested in helping you get your message out. Like the lady said, get involved, my friends. Another story I want to bring to your attention. Palm Beach Post covers a story today about how the governor's medical companies are real production houses where the most important thing is getting those patients in and out. No rush, no fuss, no muss, no bother. Let's get those people in and out. We got money to make. So if you need emergency care, I urge you to not put your dollars in the governor's pocket, my friends. There's better things to do. Also, another very interesting aspect of the news this past week. I see in the newspaper that the debris from the ongoing Japanese crisis is now reaching American shores on the West Coast. And, of course, I don't know if you heard, but in the last couple days, there's been more earthquakes in Japan. And the work to maintain, to correct, to fix, and to make safe the nuclear plants over there goes on. And, of course, unless you and I participate, then the only thing that happens at these nuclear plants over in this country will be that they continue to be run by a business-as-usual mentality. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we've got our next guests here. Let's check it out. Hello and welcome. Who do we have here? Is this John?
It's Chad here.
Oh, hi, Chad. Welcome.
Hey. Hi. How are you?
Very good, my friend. Very good. So I guess we'll be joined by your associate, and there he is.
Cool.
Let's bring him on in. Yeah, you should be here. Okay, we have John now?
Yes, that's me.
Hey, John, I just got Chad on the air. So why don't you two gentlemen tell me about Move On and the Return of the American Dream?
You want to start, Chad?
Okay, well, Move On is an online organization. We have over 5 million members across the country. And it's a progressive organization, and we deal with issues that are just obviously progressive and just trying to make things better for the average person. And to jump right into it, the American Dream is our newest movement. We're going to be holding house meetings and meetings in other places the weekend of July 16th and the 17th, basically to say, hey, you know, what's going on right now is not working. It's going in a bad direction. The Republicans are pushing it in a really bad direction, and we need to just get together and say, hey, what should the American Dream be in an economic sense, and what should it be in every other way, socially, environmentally? We're getting together across the nation in meetings in different districts across the nation, and we're just going to talk, and we're going to say, hey, what do we dream that the dream is? What could it be? What should it be? And what hopefully will it be? And everyone's just going to talk and dream and talk out loud of what we think it could be in all these in these meetings across the nation. And then we're going to just put all our information together, and we're going to come up with a contract, hopefully a really good one and possibly a revolutionary one, hopefully, and we're going to present it to our future leaders and say, hey, will you support this? Will you align with this, with our dream? And if you will, we'll support you hopefully in the elections, like all our members. So that's basically what's going on with the dream right
that
now.
That sounds really interesting. Chad,
yeah.
John, let me make a little comment. I was talking to a small businessman about 2 weeks ago, and you know, we were talking politics as we typically do, and he said, you know, I just don't know who it was in the Democrats that told these people they should expect to have a house of their own. The hell. And I said, you know, I don't know about you, but I grew up that the American dream was that every family should have a job and they should have a roof over their heads. And that dream was not far, far away, and it was not too much for the average working man and woman of this country to expect. So Move On has done some wonderful work. I was involved with them back in the early anti-Iraq war days, back even earlier than that, when they tried to get the country to pay attention to something important rather than a little escapade of the president.
Right.
So I go back with Move On quite a bit. So tell me, if people are interested in getting involved in this house party project for the weekend, for this coming weekend, what can they do? Guys, let me know. Where should they go?
John?
If you want to learn more about the house party project, you would go to moveon.org and and go to the page that describes – there you'll – there'll be a complete discussion of the page, on the page, about what the house parties and how they're structured, and I believe there's, and you could probably, but I believe if you want to link up to a house party, there's another address. Chad probably knows.
Yeah, I do know the address, but probably the best thing to do is just go to moveon.org and look around, and it should guide you to the meetings that we're having on the 16th and the 17th. They're being held across the nation, so wherever you are, you could pretty much just go check it out, and you should be able to find one that's near you.
Yeah, usually Move On has that stuff worked out really good. You can either, you know, offer to host one, or you can sign up to the nearby ones. That's usually pretty good, and I know the host tools, because I know my wife and I have hosted a half a dozen Move On events, and those tools are pretty good. Can you talk a little bit more about the idea, this American Dream project, this contract on the American Dream or contract for the American Dream? Can you talk a little bit more about that, guys?
Well, I think that one of the things that's gone wrong with this is the concentration of wealth that we now have, where a very small number of people who are, have huge salaries and end up paying low taxes. I mean, don't take it from me. Take it from Warren Buffett. He was on a show the other day saying that the top 400 earners pay an average of 16% income tax. And he thinks that, he said that his cleaning lady pays a higher percentage of her taxes, her income to taxes than he does.
Boy, they must hate him for that comment.
He's one of the few progressive people, billionaires. But I think what this means is low income people paying high taxes, high income people paying low taxes means that all the money gets concentrated. We go back to the 19th century system.
You know, it seems to me that I don't hear anyone asking the question, well, if these trickle-down policies are so good, how come we left the Bush 8 years in a hole?
Yeah.
Of course, anybody who paid attention notices that you can't run a whole world global war for whatever purpose off the books and then be surprised that you end up owing a ton of money.
Can we just basically say and just put it out there and put a period after it and just say that trickle-down just does not work and just be done with it and just don't let it happen again? Because I think that's the truth, you know? I think we've experienced that. I think that's one thing.
There's an old saying that some people will never realize something if it's against their self-interest to not realize.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the problem.
That's why us, you know, middle class and onward down the economic scale need to, you know, get together and put our voice out there, because if not, it's just going to be the rich people dictating it to us, and that's not going to be a great society.
That's right. It'll be a return to feudalism.
Yeah. Well, not a fun place to live.
If the money all goes to a few people, they won't even have any place to invest it.
It's going to be bad for them, too.
It won't work unless there are people. You know, this system runs on consumers, and if they don't have any money, then the system fails.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they see that. I don't think they see that. If they hurt everybody else, they think that, are they just going to float on this magic cloud and be okay? It's not going to work like that. If it goes so harsh and it's so polarized with the rich being up there, that it's going to creep up and just be bad for them, too. So, but I don't think the rich see that yet.
I don't know if you heard the comment that Orrin Hatch made yesterday. He said, you know, it's about damn time that the poor get up off their backs and start paying their fair share.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know why he feels he has to say that, except that I guess he's been doing it for so long that he doesn't. You know, if he thought at all, he'd realize that the only people who can help in this situation are people who have income. You can't, the average, you know, the lower two, three-fifths of the society just don't have the money. I don't know who he thinks isn't paying taxes, but I think they're taxed. They have local taxes, school taxes. I just don't know who Orrin Hatch is talking about, and I'd like to know what income group he's talking about that isn't paying their fair share.
Let me ask you to sum up. So the place that people should go is to moveon.org. Anything else, any final thoughts you want to leave them with?
Well, for me, I just say, let's progressives, let's just stay strong and keep moving forward in a positive direction, and let's do good.
Okay. John, anything else?
My idea is that, you know, you have to do something. You can't just read articles. You have to get out, get together with your neighbors, and get involved in something like the House Party movement.
Definitely.
Thanks a lot, guys. I sure
great.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Hey, move on,
one.
Man.
Okay. Yeah,
okay,
great.
I'll see you later.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, our final piece of the evening is an interview with Eric and Leanne of the Positive Mind Body Support Group Network. They're going to talk about sexual health and the AIDS problem in the Treasure Coast. So let's hear it for Eric and Leanne.
Hi, my name is Eric Martinez.
And I'm Leanne Dennison.
And we both represent a program called Positive Mind and Body Support Group Network. This network consists of giving out and supporting the network for people who are living with HIV and AIDS within the Treasure Coast area. We try to give them an opportunity and a safe forum, a place where they could come and actually express and empower them to have the peer-to-peer interaction that they need to survive dealing with the HIV and AIDS crisis.
You know, I'm afraid for too many, and certainly for the media, AIDS seems to have fallen off the radar. Can you put it in perspective? Where do we stand in terms of progress on the AIDS front?
Well, if you have access to the data like we do, then AIDS is prevalent in Florida, it's prevalent in New York, it's prevalent in California. There isn't a corner of the globe where it doesn't exist and people aren't dealing with this issue. But in large populations and transient populations, it's more prevalent. But we would just like people to understand that it is moving through every community, every background, and every age group, and every tax bracket, shall we say. And that is the crisis, and it's not on the radar because I believe that trickles down from the political aspect of it. There's no public outcry, so politicians' hands are really tied, and the media is involved with that. So when there's no public outcry, then you don't hear about it. But if you, we talk about this to many groups, and when we tell people what we know, they quickly understand the true nature of the disease, and it is a crisis in this country. We have the data to prove it.
Can you give us some idea of where the stats are today?
Well, right now, as the stats are standing, okay, men who have sex with men, which is considered MSMs, they are the largest group that are increasing in numbers, especially in a younger group, anything between 16 to 21 years old. We also are seeing that the heterosexual females are really increasing in numbers. And that has to do a lot with because of the way this disease works, because of the fact that if you might not show yourself being symptomatic until 10 to 12 years from the time you were actually infected. Also, they have shown that the numbers are increasing in the seniors. Because why? We are getting, because medication has gotten better in time and people are living longer, we are falling into the brackets where now some of us are reaching into the senior age groups, and we are now affecting that age group.
Speaking in terms of Florida, I know you said that Florida has a growing population.
Could I just add one thing?
Please do.
We are, the Treasure Coast is considered an epicenter right now in the HIV community who understands the situation. It's rivaling Miami, okay? That is alarming because Miami has a very high percentage, but Treasure Coast is rivaling Miami because we are growing so fast. That is why our numbers are rivaling Miami. And if something isn't done, we will see numbers like Miami. And we strongly encourage people when they finish listening to this is to get educated. No one is immune from this disease. We have people come into our group who've been married for 30 years. The doctor won't even test these people because when they're showing symptoms, because they say, well, you've been married for 30 years, but guess what? Their partner was out having an affair. That is all it takes. All it takes is one dirty needle, okay? Basically, what people need to understand is if you are being promiscuous, you are sleeping with every single person that person has ever slept with and come in contact with, the numbers show it, and it's very scary out there right now. And especially among the 15 to 25-year-old population, it's very alarming. And that's why we get the conservative groups to listen, because, number one, they all have children and grandchildren. They're very sexually active. They dabble in drugs. That is a recipe for disaster. And the conservative people that we talk to are actually on board with this because the financial cost is enormous. To keep a HIV-positive person well, the cost is astronomical, And we are looking at the perfect storm coming down the pike, not only in health issues, but also in financial costs out in the future.
Well, that was the next thing I was going to ask. I unfortunately have to imagine that with all of this governmental cutback, especially the impact on Medicaid they've been talking about, what are you seeing in terms of government resources being applied to this issue?
Well, what's going on right now, you have two major crises within the economy, which is affecting HIV and AIDS. And that is one, it's called ADAP, and it is the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, and also, like you just stated, Medicaid. ADAP right now has a waiting list, which we didn't have one for quite some time. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we started developing one because of the fact of the economy. Medication, like Leanne mentioned earlier, are very high in cost, and ADAP actually was a savior for these people because this gives an opportunity for someone who might be working or who is waiting to get registered with a lead agency, whether it's an AIDS services organization. They find themselves getting into ADAP so they could get their medication and get started on the treatment. Well, right now, because of the budget cuts and all everything that's trickling down from the government and up, that is basically happening is that they have now this waiting list of close to 7,000, which is within the state, and then also they are showing that they are, and I mean that's within the United States, excuse me, and they are showing also that we are giving clients that are who were on the services that have to be dropped off because they don't have enough slots, you know. There are so many rules and regulations that if a client so happens to miss an appointment or unable to pick up their meds for whatever crisis they might be going through, and it could be many reasons why, they could be actually disenrolled from the program that easily. Medicaid in itself, well, let's put it this way. Between ADAP and Medicaid, they're talking about bringing down the poverty level from 400% down to 200%. Now, Richard, I tell you one thing. Out of all my years of dealing with HIV and AIDS, and I'm going back to the beginning of since 1986, I can say to you that this will be a turn to the worse. This would actually will cause us to go back in time. We will see numbers like you would not believe of people dying rapidly. You cannot bring down the poverty level that quickly or that drastically, not thinking that you're going to hurt many people, especially those who are in the poverty-stricken levels, and or even those who are in middle income, you know. I don't even know how someone that is in the middle income, even high income, that can actually afford these meds. I mean, one of these meds, as an example, you're talking about anything between $1,500 to $1,800 a month, okay? That's a lot of money just for one med. So imagine that if you're on 3 to 4 meds, and I'll use myself as an example, Leanne and I, we both are positive, and we've both been taking meds for quite some time. My average cost of my meds are close to $4,000 per month. And that's unbelievable because of the fact that we help out so many other agencies and other programs abroad, and we are forgetting those who are here. Now, it is wonderful to help people abroad and to help other countries, and I'm for that completely, but we cannot forget those who are here. And those who are here are suffering dramatically, and we need to actually get the word out to make people understand that, you know, it's about writing to your congressman, it's writing to your senator, writing to your mayor or your state representatives, and letting them know that this cannot happen. Because if it does, I'm telling you, Richard, this will actually bring back some times where we were seeing people die at a rapid pace.
What you're painting is a very troubling picture. Could you explain how that actually works?
Yeah, I just want to take it to an individual point of view.
Okay. Good, good. I'm sure that'll help.
Look, all of the fear and stigma that is out there about HIV is fueling the epidemic. When
sure.
you are afraid of the disease, you're afraid to bring it up to your partner, you are enabling the disease. Okay, that is one major problem we have in this country. Secondly, if you know that there's no way you're ever going to be able, you don't have health insurance, you're not going to have access to health insurance. Look how many people in this country right now are having problems with health insurance just to start with.
Sure. It's basically unaffordable.
God forbid I get HIV and I can't get taken care of, okay? So I'm afraid. It adds to the fear. So the poverty level means that, once again, the middle class is squeezed again, okay? So people who have assets, they have to get rid of them. We've come in contact with people who have actually had to give away their assets to get meds. Do you understand?
Incredible.
Yes.
Incredible.
Well, what you could tell you right now, Richard, also, is that if someone, let's say, is at 400, as we have right now, we're at 400%, and someone is, let's say, making, and I'm using this as an example, making anything between below 40,000, they're pretty safe, but that's up to the 400%, okay? But if they start bringing this down to 200, you're talking about that half of those people between anything between 25,000, let's say between anything from 24,000 to 40,000, could actually be affected dramatically because of this lowering of this poverty level. The thing about it is that cutting back this major level between 400 to 200, you're talking about now, and you're going into people who are in a poverty level that their income is anything between, let's say, 10,000 to about 18,000. Now, you're now making those people nervous, because those people are now seeing that those above them are being cut away, and now are they next? Are they going to be seeing their services cut also? But the point comes down to is that we shouldn't have to go backwards. I mean, if you really think about where we had started from back during the 1980s to where we are now, well, you know, we should be going upwards. Now, I understand the economy has been affected dramatically because of everything that's going on in this world, but we have to come into terms to understand one thing, and I really have feelings about this. And that is that if we're not going to take care of our community, how are we going to take care of those abroad? How are we going to give help to people who are in other countries when we can't even take care of our own? You know, I always tell people that, you know, I said, think about that. If you can't take care of your own backyard problems, how are you going to take care of problems that are abroad? I mean, that's like opening up a Pandora box and finding yourself caught up in it, and next thing you know, you're swamped underneath things that you had never thought that would ever come out before.
Is there a home AIDS test like there is a home pregnancy test? Is that out there or not yet?
There are things that are in the horizon, a test for HIV, you know. Right now, I tell people is that, you know, the test that the that we do and the one the Department of Health do and other organizations are a swab test that you could actually do. It only takes about 20 minutes between the paperwork and the test, and it takes about 3 weeks for it to come back, okay? There's also one that's called a rapid OraSure test, okay? That one takes about 20 minutes. The only thing is that you have to get a rapid test site to do this that's in your area, okay? And there's not too many of those at the present time. They are growing in numbers. We are fortunate to have one in our Treasure Coast area. We also have, you know, doctors have pretty much understand this disease in a way that, you know, that if there is a, like, you know, I always tell people is that this disease, the one thing you could understand is that if you had dealt with high-risk acts out there, and I'm talking about everything between intravenous drug use or drug use in itself, multiple partners, not knowing your partner is big enough as a problem, okay, then you need to get tested, okay? Why be in doubt? You know, you need to get tested because of simple factors. That's the only way you're going to get the answer. You know, I could go on and ramble about the flu-like symptoms and all this other stuff that a person could look out for, but the truth of the matter is that I've seen too many people, Richard, that have actually gone dormant, okay? The virus stays dormant in their body for about good 10, 12 years, and all of a sudden, bang, it comes out of nowhere. And by then, it's kind of too late, because guess what? They could have been on treatment a long time ago. They could have been doing very well, and they could have been under a better treatment than what they are now, with no treatment, you know, or playing catch-up. The trouble is that, like I tell many people, is that you need to contact your county health department or contact us directly. We can set up or navigate you to a site, or if you're within the area, we can't give you the test itself.
Can I just say one thing
about
the emotional and social issue of fear, okay? Eric and I have both been positive over 22 years, each of us, okay? Now, the one thing I want to leave people, besides getting educated by the correct sources, if you, at this day and age, if you knew how fast the virus is traveling and how susceptible we all are to this, there's one thing I want to leave with the people. If you are not if you are not controlling the virus by knowing who you're sleeping with and getting tested, if you are in doubt, the virus is controlling you, okay? No ifs, ands, or buts. In this day and age, you control it or it controls you. If you are positive, getting in touch with the right people, this is actually a very enlightening and a great thing to overcome. We have both, Eric and I, have lived with this a long time, and there is an absolute positive emotional aspect to it that people never imagine. We see it all the time. We've lived through it. If it's dealt with correctly, it's a wonderful thing, okay?
We have come such a long way from where we were to where we are now. Don't get me wrong, we've got a lot of long way to go, but hey, I got to say, we're doing fairly well, and I'm very happy to say that these meds are working.
And I want to just put a plug in for the medical community, because we are such close contacts with the medical community through our project. They are constantly crying, begging for participants in studies. The research and development that goes on behind this disease is unbelievable. It's fascinating to learn about. It's a whole science where this disease has come and where it could go. The ways they can go with this are you can't even imagine that the possibilities that the doctors, the researchers can go with this. But they need people to enroll in studies, and the white men are the first ones to sign up, and they need everybody to sign up for studies. They're constantly crying, pleading for people to become enrolled in studies. But that is a very fascinating aspect of this disease, is where the research is at right now. It's fascinating reading for any average person, and so there's a lot down the pike, okay? It could go. There's a lot of hope. There's a lot of technology that could be put into place. They're just not sure. Once again, without public outcry and backing, they're not sure where to put the money, you know? Should we put it this way, that way, that way? There's a lot of ways it could go. And from a layperson's point of view, from every person on the street, just don't get it. You don't want it. You just protect yourself. You learn the facts. You see how scary it is, how anybody can get it. But the research is phenomenal, what's going on right now.
Well, thank you both so very much. Why don't you tell my audience again what organization you work with?
Positive Mind Body Support Group Network.
Well, Leanne.
Yes, it's on the web.
Leanne and Eric, thank you so very much. You've been terribly informative, and thanks for the good news on the AIDS front, and keep up the good work. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, friends, once again, you've been with us while we've talked to the kind of progressives that are building a better world. You've got to stay informed, and the only way you're going to hear the progressive voices from across the state is in a show like this. So I'm the news director, Richard Spezak. I want to thank you on behalf of myself and on behalf of my co-producer, Mickey Royce, without whose help this show could not be done. So join us next week for Progressive News Network. Don't forget, next Saturday in Miami, Progressive Caucus. The following week, the Platform Conference in Orlando. Be there. There's a better world.